Hi there! Before we dive into this episode, we wanted to share some news with you. If you have been a part of the Smart Habits for Translators community for a while, you have probably heard us mention our favorite project management tool quite a few times. We love using Asana and always recommend it to everyone we know. Between our client work, the podcast, personal projects, family activities, and volunteering, we have a lot going on, and Asana helps us stay organized and get things done. And no, this isn't an ad for Asana. We actually use the free version. We would love to show you how you can finally take the guesswork out of your day and avoid feeling like you're going nowhere fast.
So join us on Thursday, March 24th, 2022 from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time for a workshop on how to use Asana in your translation or interpreting business or any other area of your work or personal life. We'll show you how we set up our Asana workspaces, how to create projects and break them down into manageable tasks, assign deadlines, keep track of client work, marketing, personal tasks, and everything in between. All you need is the free version of Asana and 2 hours of your time, together with us and a friendly group of colleagues. This is perfect for you if you've recently attended one of our quarterly virtual business retreats and you're now trying to accomplish the goals that you set for yourself and your business. So go to smarthabitsfortranslators.com/Asana. That's smarthabitsfortranslators.com/ASANA to learn more and to grab your spot. We can't wait to see you on March 24th. And now, back to our episode. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we'll focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Zampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 61. In today's episode, we have an exciting treat in store for you. Not only do we get to talk to a fellow freelancer and fellow podcaster, but we also get to talk to another word person. We think you'll love our guest today and gain loads of insights from her on a topic we all want to learn more about, and that is drumming up new business. Especially during the past 2 years, freelancers have seen the ups and downs of freelancing coupled with so much uncertainty due to the pandemic. We've heard from many of you that you'd like more ideas for ways to grow your business and get more recurring work from clients. Well, our guest today happens to have some excellent advice on this topic, and we're thrilled she agreed to join us. We're happy to welcome Melanie Paget-Powers to the podcast. Melanie is the owner of Mel Edits and lives in Silver Spring, Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C. She's a freelance writer and managing editor for Healthcare Membership Associations and regularly writes about public health, COVID-19, healthcare, and issues related to diversity, equity, and inclusion. She has a journalism degree and was previously a newspaper reporter in her home state of Indiana. Melanie is also the creator and host of the Deliberate Freelancer podcast and the new Deliberate Freelancer Facebook group, which focuses on the business side of freelancing. Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, Melanie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to talk with you all today.
Yeah, thanks. Welcome, Melanie. You know, I've told you this already, but I'm a longtime listener to your podcast, and I tell everybody about it. So, but I think the first time I came across you, your work was on freelancing was at the ACES conference in Chicago several years ago. You gave a presentation on taking a freelance business retreat, and it was excellent, and the room was packed, as you can imagine, anybody listening. It's a popular topic, but you had some really good advice, and I know I've heard you talk about it since then on your podcast, too.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's interesting to hear how we first connected, because I know we connected through ACES, but I've gone every year before the pandemic, and
yeah.
So it's nice to hear how people sort of discovered my obsession with retreats.
Yeah. And since then, actually, I've done a retreat at least once a year ever since then. And Veronica does them as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you probably hear that from a lot of other freelancers, right?
Yeah, it's funny. I had no idea how the idea of doing a solo business retreat would really resonate with people. I mm-hmm. do hear that a lot. And then I'll see, this is just amazing. I'll see people on Twitter, because that's sort of my social media platform of choice. And mm-hmm. I'll see people there telling other people, hey, you should do a solo business retreat. You should check out Melanie's podcast. Mm-hmm. And that is like so rewarding for me.
It is good. And actually, we now do also, with some of our listeners, we do quarterly business retreats, and they become really popular. So definitely something to maybe think about, even with your Facebook group, would be cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard one of your episodes last year. I remember you talking about doing that retreat. So that's a pretty cool idea. I like that idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's virtual. It's not like going to a hotel for a weekend or anything, sure. But it works. Yeah. Okay. So first, we'd love to know more about you. So if you could tell us about your freelance business, like what services you offer, maybe when and how you started your career and how it's evolved over time.
Sure. Well, that was a lovely introduction. So you said a lot of it in there. Mm-hmm. But I call myself Mel Edits, my official business name, but I'm really a freelance writer and a managing editor. That's kind of where I've zeroed in on over the last 8 years that I've been freelancing. I say that I write mostly about public health and healthcare, and mostly for membership associations. And that means that that's my sweet spot, but I also write about healthcare for healthcare companies, hospitals, ghostwrite for healthcare blogs. Mm-hmm. And then I also write for membership associations that have nothing to do with healthcare, just because I know I have a network there and I have a community of people, and they'll hire me to write about all sorts of topics that are not related to healthcare because I love membership associations. So I also do a little bit of copy editing. I really cut way back on that. And I do some proofreading of magazines. And that's kind of where my business has landed in 2022. And I started frereelancing in October 2013. I quit a job I hated. I was at membership associations at that point for about 13 years. And I found that I really loved associations. I loved having a specific focus of what we were covering. You know, I worked at a women's health association, and we were pro women's health, and we mm-hmm. talked all the time and wrote about women's health. And I really liked having that focus. And I had really become a healthcare reporter and editor and loved that. But that particular job, as a lot of jobs, I loved the work, but the office politics and the new boss and the situation there became untenable. And mm-hmm. I was at an age where I thought, oh God, I don't want to interview for another job. Mm-hmm. You never know what the job is going to be until you get in there. Mm-hmm. You might have a great interview and then find out that it's just a mess when you get in there, and you might have a really controlling boss or whatever. And I just didn't want to do it again. And I thought, I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to be a freelancer, and you know, we'll see how it pans out. So I had never intended to be a freelancer, and I'm someone that likes a lot of control and a lot of order in my life.
Yeah.
But I just was so fed up that I was like, I'll do anything. I don't care. So it was the best decision I ever made in my business, I think. I was so happy almost immediately as a freelancer. I took to it really well. I really loved the process of building my business and mm-hmm. focusing on the business side, which surprised me. I think of, you know, I grew up thinking business owners study business, you know, and I'm not an entrepreneur. And I found out that I was, and I really liked that. So it's, you know, my business has evolved. It's constantly evolving. In the beginning, I did social media management because I had done that at my job, but I found I didn't really want to do that for clients anymore. I didn't mm-hmm. want to keep up on the nonstop changes in social media platforms and
yeah.
trends. And so I just, and I did a lot of copy editing in the beginning. That doesn't pay very well, and I don't love to edit all day long, especially copy editing. I like doing substantive editing. Mm-hmm. And I had, what I really love to do is put publications together. You mentioned earlier, I was a newspaper reporter back in the day, and I worked mostly at weeklies, and we created the newspaper. You know, I mm-hmm. did the layout and I edited and I wrote stories and I took photos, and I really love putting publications together. So my freelance business has evolved to really figure out what I'm passionate about and what I can make money at and what people will hire me for. Mm-hmm. And if I can find the sweet spot for those three things, that's the life, right? That's the goal. Mm-hmm. And so it's constantly evolving. And that's part of the excitement too. I'd never thought about that when I first started. I thought, well, this is going to be my business and this is how it's going to be. And I thought, wait a minute, I can do whatever I want. I could try new things and I can fail and I can grow and I could do kind of whatever I want. And that's really exciting to me.
Yeah, I love hearing you say that because it's so true. I mean, we don't have to put ourselves in these boxes or like always do the same thing for our entire career. We can change and evolve and take on new things and let go of what doesn't work for us. And I think that's one of the biggest draws of being a freelancer. Kudos to you, though, for putting it out there, because I mean, that's one of the things I love the most about your podcast is like when you do your annual reviews. I know you just did the 2021 business review for your last year. And by the way, congratulations. It was a big year for you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah. But I mean, I thought it was really interesting because your takeaway on that was basically like you did more of the things you wanted to be working on and you let go of some of the things that you were like, you know, I don't really want to do this anyway, or I'll do it if I have to kind of a thing. But you clearly, you made a space for yourself. And I think that's, when you have an open mind like that, it's very doable. It just takes, you know, like you said, some strategy and some creativity. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. And yeah. And the pandemic kind of forced my hand, right? As mm-hmm. much as I hate pretty much everything about the pandemic and I'm sick of it like everyone else, it forced me, and we could talk about this more later, but it forced me to really look at what I was doing mm-hmm. and do some soul searching and why am I doing things I don't like to do and what do I really want to do if I have this chance? Because I've always said I never want to be an employee ever again. And I didn't become an employee when the pandemic hit. And I thought, well, all right, if I can make it through those early days of the pandemic, then I can do this. You know, that was a pretty major hit. And yeah. I survived. And even, you know, as you alluded to, I had the best financial year last year that I've ever had.
Yeah, it was big. It was big for a freelancer. I thought it was really good. So we'll link to that for sure in the show notes. It was good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So as you know, we talk a lot about smart habits here on our podcast, and we consider smart habits to be those things that help you in your everyday life. So whether it be in business or personal life, but for now, we'll just stick to work life. So what are some smart habits that have been crucial in your career?
Yeah, well, I am a habit nerd. Mm-hmm. I love everything about habits. I like making my life efficient and productive. And not that I push back up against productivity a little bit. You don't have to be productive every minute of your day. But I always say that my brain likes order and I kind of categorize things in certain ways. And that's just how my brain works. Mm-hmm. And so I love habits. And a couple of things that I kind of just came across, I think, in the early days of my freelance journey was this idea of taking advantage of my peak energy. Mm-hmm. You know, most of us used to work these 9-to-5 jobs. And by the way, 9-to-5 jobs were created based on a factory system in the mm-hmm. early 1900s. Our brain is not meant to concentrate on hard work from 9-to-5. I will get on my soapbox about that. But I realized early that we all have these peak productivity times. And often we talk about it like, oh, are you a morning person or are you a night owl? Well, I'm a morning person. And it doesn't mean, like, I don't love to get up early in the morning. Mm-hmm. But when I do get up, I have a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. My brain synapses are firing. That's when I have all my creativity. And so I thought, okay, well, I need to take advantage of this in my day. So, and if you're, you know, all this advice, if you're a night person, just flip the script and take advantage of those night hours and not work the 9-to-5 necessarily. So in the morning, I make sure that I do the deep work, as Cal Newport calls it, the work that requires more cognitive ability, more focus, more creativity. I do mm-hmm. that in the morning. And for me, that means if I have to write that day, I write first thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll get up actually. A lot of times I don't start my day, especially in the winter right now. I'm not starting my day till 8 or 9 o'clock. But in the summer, in particular, when the sun's up, I might get up to write at 5 or 6 in the morning. and before I do anything else, because I can get up in my pajamas and write for 3 hours and then kind of start my day. And I'm so much more on, like, I'm just firing on all cylinders at that point when I'm writing. And so for me, I really focus the morning on that type of thing. And also if I'm doing bigger projects that take brainstorming or creativity, I do those in the morning. And then I'm usually spent after lunch and I have to kind of force myself to go back and do work. And I do that if I have work to do. If I don't have work to do, then I don't have to work in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times I have admin work and emails I need to answer, and I can do some marketing. And as a writer, I also schedule my source interviews in the afternoon. Now, that's not to say they don't take brain power. I work really hard on my articles. But if I schedule a call with someone and I'm prepared for that call, I can do that in the afternoon. And that keeps me working. So if I schedule an interview at 4 o'clock, then I'll work until 4 o'clock, as opposed to wanting to take a nap at 2 o'clock. And so it keeps me on task. Mm-hmm. And so I know that. I know when the best times are for me to take advantage of that peak productivity time.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And it's it can be so tricky to figure that piece out. But once you do, like I learned that too. It's such a wonderful feeling when you get that challenging creative task off your plates first thing in the morning or during the first part of the day, and then can just, you know, do less demanding things later on, or things that aren't as sort of mentally exhausting, such as creative mm-hmm. tasks usually are. So we love that you talk about work-life clarity rather than work-life balance on your podcast, Deliberate Freelancer. In fact, we love it so much. We have adopted this concept as well and referred to you. We feel that work-life clarity is extremely important for freelance language professionals. So what are your thoughts on this, and how do you try to protect the boundaries between your work and personal life?
Yeah, I've heard you all mention it a few times on your show, so I'm very honored. Thank you for joining me on my soapbox about this. I think it's really important, and I honestly don't remember where I came up with the phrase work-life clarity. I mean, there's no original ideas. I might have heard it somewhere, or it might have just popped into my head. So apologies if I took that from somewhere. I honestly can't remember.
I think it was a guest on your podcast, wasn't it? Is her name Laura? She was one of your earliest guests. I thought it was her.
Laura Poole?
Yeah, I think it was Laura Poole. You guys started talking about it then, and I thought, this is
oh my gosh.
Perfect, I think.
You have, like, discovered. Well, I'll go back and listen. And sneak peek, I've invited Laura Poole back on show to talk about something else. So that'll be coming up. Yeah, she's lovely. That's great. I'm going to have to go listen to that old episode to see if that's where I stole it from. Anyway, kudos to Laura. but, you know, I'll first say that if you believe in this idea of work-life balance, which I don't really, but I've always been really good at it, right? So I'm not a parent. I'm not a mom. So I've never had sort of that guilt of I'm spending too much time at work, or I'm spending too much time with the kids. I know that guilt that parents, often moms, have. But when I was an employee, we didn't have smartphones and we didn't have access to work at home. So we worked 9 to 5 and we really worked 9 to 5. You couldn't actually do work at home unless maybe occasionally I would take pages home to edit. Mm-hmm. But when the weekend hit, I didn't think about work, or I couldn't actually do work on my home computer. And it was glorious. I wish that everybody was like that. Well, not during the pandemic, but I wish there was that mindset, right? That people didn't have to work when they were off having their personal life. But work-life balance means balance, and that a balance is equal, mm-hmm. right? So it's 50-50. Mm-hmm. So that's not attainable. Yeah. Who decides and how do you decide, oh, this is 50% of this and 50% of that? It's just not attainable. So you're always striving to meet something that won't work. And also, as freelancers, do we need a work-life balance? It insinuates that work is completely separate from our real life, which we know is not mm-hmm. true. It's good to have boundaries, but work is a part of our life and it should be a very fulfilling, rewarding part of our life. And that's why so many of us are doing it. So I think this idea of work-life balance for freelancers or employees is a myth. It puts us in a position that we'll just never be able to reach and stresses us out. But clarity is for the individual. Clarity is for you. That's clarity for you, your family, your business. And I think you can really think about what intentions you want for your life and your business and your personal life. And you know, what do you want your life to look like? What do you want your business to look like? Do you want to work just 20 hours a week and then focus on some special hobbies that you have or a family, you know, your family? Or maybe you want to be a digital nomad, or, you know, I know people, I'm a very big proponent of taking a lot of time off and that it actually can be done as a freelancer. So I know people, you know, that take off 4 weeks in the summer. So I think just figuring out your intention and your clarity for what you want in your work and your personal life, and recognizing that it's okay that those two overlap, is more attainable and more stress-free than this myth of work-life balance. And I'll talk a little bit about boundaries too, because I do think, saying all that, that you do need to have boundaries when you're thinking about your work-life clarity. And, you know, think about the things that you struggle with. Do you find it hard to say no to clients? Do you find it hard to say no to family and friends or to volunteer activities? Do you doom scroll on your phone all night long? Do you check work email at night and feel like you have to reply immediately? Do you check work email on the weekends when you say you don't really want to do that? I mean, it's okay to work weekends and nights if that's your intention, but to not have those boundaries and know when work needs to turn off for a little while so you can focus on other things that are important to you and that fulfill you and bring you joy, I think that's sort of what you need to consider and set some boundaries in your life.
Yeah, so true. So now that we've brought up your amazing podcast, we also want to touch on something you share about regularly on your podcast, which we think is useful for freelancers in any field, and that is drumming up new business. You were very open about the fact that your business took a hit in 2020, just like so many freelancers experienced, and many of our colleagues in translation and interpreting experienced that as well. And we know you've mentioned that you don't love the traditional networking style of marketing. We totally agree that you can still drum up new business without attending every client event or feel like you're constantly pitching yourself. So can you share with our listeners how you like to drum up new business and what's worked well for you?
Yeah, absolutely. It gets a little tricky sometimes because people want the answers. They want tactics, like just tell me the one thing that I have to do and I'll do that. And it's a little more amorphous than that, but a lot of it does come down to the fact that you need to be marketing all the time. And I don't like the word marketing as that much. I mean, sometimes it makes people feel icky. It makes them feel inauthentic. People don't like the word networking sometimes. So I think of all of these things as building relationships. Mm-hmm. And I had a great guest on my show, Anna Hetzel, and Anna talked about building a community rather than a network. And they described it as, you know, a network is just this list of people. If you're my age, you remember the old Rolodex, right? It's just this list of people I know. And that list of contacts can be really handy. But a community is a group of people who are actually mutually invested in each other's successes. Mm-hmm. And you can reach out to your community for help. And, you know, times are tough and I need some help with this. Or do you know somebody? And they'll reach out to you and say, hey, I heard about this person. I have a client of mine that needs this kind of work. Do you do this? And so building a community is really important. And I like to think of that, just all of that stuff, as relationship building. So building relationships with people and talking about the things that I love to talk about, like associations and writing and editing and podcasting and journalism, I can talk about those things very authentically because I love them. And I've been in this business a long time and I have a lot of opinions on things and I have a lot of, you know, I just love talking about them. It's like, talk to me about cats and baseball and we can talk all day long, you know, because I love those too. So when you build a community of people and you build these relationships, talking about things that you love to talk about, I think it is easier and it's really authentic. Now, I'll talk about a few tactics because I know that's what people want. I always say that the number one way that I get work is referrals. And again, that's a little hard. That comes in with the community part. A lot of work comes to me because I know a lot of people and they refer me to other, you know, clients refer me to other associations or people elsewhere in their organization. Other freelancers refer people to me because that's not the type of work that freelancer does, or they don't have the capacity at that time to do it. And so referrals often come to me. But I did something back pre-pandemic long ago in January 2019, just thinking about the new year and what I wanted to do that year. And I decided I was going to email my network. And that included past clients, current clients, colleagues in the industry, some other freelancers, not all the freelancers I knew, but others that, you know, I was pretty close to, or we'd referred work to each other. It also included potential clients that I'd had a conversation with. So these weren't cold calls or cold emails. I'd had some sort of conversation in the past about, hey, we should work together. And it just, nothing ever came out of that for whatever reason. So that was kind of who I emailed. And I was very specific in that email about what I was looking for that year. And I actually created a bulleted list, like, what do I want this year and what would help my business and what would I enjoy? And that had things for me that had stuff on it, like I have, and I said, like, I have room for one more magazine to proofread, and I have an opening for a new magazine to be a managing editor of, you know, can I, how, and then I said, how can I help you? And I had a few other things on the list and some more general services that I offered, and the response was amazing. People reach out to me for work. One thing that people don't think about is I had a client who I had known forever in the association industry. And I had done, I think I was doing, I don't remember what kind of work. Oh, I was doing copy editing for her at the time. And copy editing is very close to proofreading. But she said, oh, I had no idea you did proofreading. No idea. I need a proofreader for the magazine. So here I was working with her. I'd known her forever. Mm-hmm. We just assume that everybody knows what our services are if we have more than one, or that we assume they understand. You know, I'm sure there's nuances in translating and interpreting that you think, oh, well, everybody understands what I do, but I'm telling you, they don't.
No, they don't.
And so to remind your clients, hey, how can I help you? Did you know I do these things too? And I have, and put it out there like, I have an opening, you know, that shows that you're in demand and you happen to have this opening right now, or I have space for this new client. And so that email in 2019 brought in $30,000 in new work.
And you didn't, like, have to go to any awkward networking event or
I did not. I sent an email. And let me tell you, too, the other benefit, I mean, money is really great, but also I got all these emails back that were like, you know, you do an amazing job and I'm happy to recommend you. And I was like, oh, that just makes me feel good. You know? So that was a good way to start off that year. And then the pandemic hit in March of 2020. And as you said, I've been very vocal. I lost about half my income overnight. Mm-hmm. I am the primary breadwinner in my family. I really wanted to panic, but I really didn't have a lot of time to panic because I had to make that money up to actually pay our bills like the next month. And I mean, I had a cushion, right? Mm-hmm. But I was, you know, when the pandemic hit, I was like, that was March. I was like, what am I going to do in June and July? Mm-hmm, right. Like when the money starts dwindling. Mm-hmm. And so it was really scary. And so I remember that email that I had sent in January 2019. And I thought, all right, well, I'll just send another email out. And maybe, you know, luckily, I will say I'm very lucky that I'm a healthcare writer. And so I was like, all right, I can write about COVID-19. Who needs me to write about COVID-19? And so I sent another email like that. And I kind of jokingly, you know, I like to be funny. And I kind of jokingly said, hey, I have a bunch of openings. Ha ha. Thank you, pandemic. You know, like, you could tell these openings were not by choice and I'd lost some services. And I also, before I sent that email, I brainstormed on what else could I do right now that could be helpful or could bring in money. Mm-hmm. Like maybe people at some point will want me to write a style guide. Maybe people need me to, you know, create a new newsletter for them about, you know, working from home suddenly or updating people on COVID, like not things I knew a lot about. It was kind of tangential to what I did, but it was like, I can figure this out and make it happen. Let's promote it and see if I have people that need it. And so I added that. And I created a bulleted list and was like, here are all the services I can provide. What do you need help with right now? And I specifically said, or do you know anyone who might need my services? I asked specifically for referrals. Mm-hmm. And I got, again, total coincidence, $30,000 out of that email right away.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing. And I will say two of those, the two biggest work gigs that I got out of that, that was continued for 2020 and into 2021 were both from freelance writers referring me to their clients.
Wow.
So, this just illustrates that freelance writers are our community, or other freelancers are our community and not our competition.
Exactly.
And so, they gave me these amazing leads and said, well, my editor was looking, one was a freelance writer and their client was looking for an editor. And she's like, I don't do this kind of editing. And I did. And another one needed a managing editor temporarily. And those were huge. They replaced the income that I had lost that year.
Wow. This is, such a good story. And I think that the takeaway here for a lot of people is that you didn't have to put in so much time to get this huge return. Like, it sounds like between the brainstorming and writing the email, probably less than an hour of your time, I would assume. And, $30,000 later. I mean, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to you. And I love that you pointed out that our colleagues are also part of our community. And referrals are a huge part of every freelancer's business. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I think the email, I'm a writer, but anyone can write these emails. I think the couple things is I was really honest, especially in that 2020 email about, I need work. Mm-hmm. And I was really crystal clear about the services I provided and what I was looking for. But I kept framing it as, this is what I do. How can I help you? What do you need? And, it's not like, oh, I need work. I'm desperate.
Yeah.
It's like, they want you. They need you. Mm-hmm. So tell them how you can help them. And it's that reframing it, I think, that made that email really strong.
Yeah. And that you were so specific. I think that's incredibly helpful for people, that if they don't have work for you, it gives them an idea. Like, as soon as you make that specific point, somebody goes, oh, yeah, I know somebody who needs that. But like, if you just say, hey, I need work, it's like, it makes them do the work of thinking much more about what that could be. So I like the specifics of that. I thought that was really a good idea.
Yeah, most people are happy to help, but you have to be specific. Otherwise, like when you get this vague request, you're like, okay, what exactly can I do for you?
Yeah.
Right. As you said, don't make them do the work. Just tell them, hey, do you know this person, this, unnamed person right now that I can help?
Well, that segues really well into our next question and point, which is that we really love that in your podcast intro, you mentioned we are not about the hustle. We are not about the feast or famine cycle. We're about building a freelance business deliberately. And we think that this message just resonates with so many freelancers, like this way of working and striving to avoid times of famine. But we know, too, that it's not always easy. It does happen to everybody at some point. So what are your tips for navigating the feast and famine cycle? I mean, you've already covered a couple, I'm sure, here, but also just finding long-term ways to overcome it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are two things that I would talk about here. One, anchor clients, and then project rates. So anchor clients are those regular clients that you can count on month to month, and that gets you out of the feast or famine a little bit. It also helps with your cash flow. If you can, have money in the bank and don't have to stress from month to month. And anchor clients can be retainer clients, but they can also just be regular partners. So for me, anchor clients are those magazines that I'm the managing editor for, because, ideally they want the same managing editor every, I have one that comes out, I have a newsletter that comes out once a month and another magazine that's only quarterly, but I'm always working on it. And I know, okay, it comes out quarterly, that's 4 payments a year. And I have another one that's bi-monthly. Okay, that's 6 payments a year. I know that that's going to, go on for a while. And so anchor clients, finding those clients, figuring out in your industry what that type of service is. It could be, for some people, it could be writing a certain number of blog posts a month, or it could just be, I'm available for this type of translating or interpreting. Every month they know they're going to need a certain number of hours, or they want to have you kind of in the wings for events. And so just kind of trying to find those clients and focusing on finding those clients and doing the marketing, whether it's, on social media or reaching out to, again, asking for referrals and about, try to think of the services that you could provide that would create that consistent work, and then tell people about how you can provide those services. So that's anchor clients. And then I always talk about project rates. So project rates are, you know, charging based on your value and your expertise, your years of experience, and frankly, how much money or an idea of how much money that client is going to earn off of our work. So if they're having you create a product that they're going to turn around and sell, mm-hmm. and they, you know, of course you don't know how much they're going to make, but they're going to sell that and hope to make a lot of money, then you don't charge them $500 for it. You charge them a hefty fee. And in figuring out project rates, sometimes it's fuzzy math and it's confidence and it's guessing, and but it's not exchanging time for money, which is what an hourly rate does. And hourly rates also penalize you if you're really fast,
yeah.
and they don't take account into all that value that you're bringing. And so really changing things up and charging per project is going to mean that you can earn more. When you do the math, you're earning more per hour and you're not having to work so many hours a week. And also, if you're charging hourly, it's going to be capped at some point, right? You don't want to work 40 hours a week for the client on really hard work. That's a lot of work to do and doesn't take into account all the other stuff that you have to do for your business. And so, you know, if you're charging hourly and you hit 40 hours, like, you're just overworked and you can't earn any more after that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And also, I think one thing that you mentioned about, like, sort of doing some thinking ahead of time to see what kind of return the client will have, sometimes you can find that out after the fact. I mean, you've already charged for it probably by then, but for future projects, maybe even with other clients, you know, if you say, how did that go, that, you know, whatever it was you did for them, mm-hmm. that assignment that turned into something bigger, you know, was your team pleased, or did you find, you know, that it brought you a lot of new customers? Because that's how you sort of learn about the return on a lot of these projects that we all do. And, you know, I was just talking to a customer of mine the other day about the return they got on the emails I wrote for them in January, and their open rate went up by 15%, and their click-through rate was also very good. So it's like, they're getting the return, you know. If they get people to sign on, they're more than making the money back that they spent with me. So you're right. I mean, charging appropriately is something that a lot of people are a little bit afraid to do at first. But when you put it in those mm-hmm. terms, it just takes some of the emotion out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that you ask them and you're not saying, like, how much money did you make off of that? You're saying, how did it go? Were people pleased? And those are really great questions. I like that idea to, you know, get some follow-up.
Yeah. So you've already touched on a little bit of some marketing methods that work for you, but maybe there's something else that you might want to share. And I wanted to ask you also, when it comes to your marketing, how do you find time to fit it into your schedule?
Yeah, that last one is tricky because I say I don't like marketing, but I like being on social media, let's be clear. and I could, especially after lunch when I told you I'm not really firing on all cylinders, I'm like, oh, let me just get on Twitter for a minute, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. It's never just a minute. So I do, well, I'll talk first about something that I'm doing that's new. I've really gotten into LinkedIn this past year. A few months ago, I did a purge of my LinkedIn connections. I had about 900, and LinkedIn just wasn't doing it for me. And I was seeing lots of people. I'm like, how am I connected with this person? I see this post. I'm like, I'm connected with them? Who is this person? I have no idea. You know, I met them once at a cocktail hour 7 years ago, and then they all, you know, connected with me on LinkedIn, and they're not even in my industry. We just happen to live in DC, and, like, I don't want to connect with those people on LinkedIn. So I did a purge. I actually did it twice. I got it down to 400 people, which still sounds like a lot to me, but 400, I know almost every one of those people. I actually know them, and they are in my industry, either in sort of the healthcare, like, they're content marketing people, or they're membership association people, or they're other editors that might hire me. Mm-hmm. I don't have a ton of freelancers on that list. I have close freelancers, but sometimes I'll get connection requests from freelancers I don't even know. And I think, you know, I don't know you. And this is not a community, right? Like, you're just connecting with me and I'm never going to hear from you again. So I was really tough on who I let in mm-hmm. by LinkedIn, because what I really wanted to do was know everyone and also create a stream of posts, you know, in my feed that would be relevant for mm-hmm. me and that I could actually engage with. And that happened. I mean, my feed became these posts of like, oh, I care about this, or talking about, you know, healthcare, or they're talking about editing, or they're talking about, you know, membership associations. And then I could go in and thoughtfully and authentically comment on these posts because I knew what the heck they were talking about, or I knew people and I'd get all these like new people got new jobs or whatever. I actually knew those people, so I could congratulate them, you know, authentically. Yeah. Like it wasn't some stranger that I was congratulating. And so that's going to be really interesting, I think, this year to see what happens with LinkedIn, because I am connecting more on there. And I've had a couple of podcast guests talk about LinkedIn. I'm trying to do all the things that they have recommended. And so I'm just really curious to see what my LinkedIn work will do. And as far as the time, I've tried different things like, oh, on Friday mornings, I'm going to spend an hour doing this. And I'm going to batch my time and only do marketing on these days. And I'm going to turn on a timer. And I think those are all great tips. I think you need to find what works for you. I've never stuck to any of that. So I think what has worked for me is just, I almost do some marketing, sort of that ad hoc marketing, as like breaks in between my work during the day. I kind of pop over and do, pop into LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever. And that works fine for me. But as far as like having a more marketing strategy, I try to look at that every quarter and really come up with maybe, oh, okay, I need to send a bunch of LOIs, or I need to reach out to these past clients, and let me put that on my to-do list and, you know, put it on my calendar, and I'll spend this particular day 3 hours just focusing on emailing a bunch of people. So that works a little better for me than to say like every week on Friday for an hour, I'm going to do marketing. But it really depends on just what works for you.
Yeah. And for anybody listening, an LOI is a letter of introduction, which is so interesting because writers talk about it all the time. And in our field, people don't really, but it's basically an email directly to somebody introducing yourself to them and letting them know what you can offer. And in some cases, for writers, there's also a pitch involved. But in this case, I mean, any translator could do the same thing. We need to make a habit of it.
Yeah. And you could think of it as like, you know, we used to write these cover letters with our resumes for jobs, right? Yeah. And it's like you introduce yourself, you force yourself to brag a little bit about how awesome you are and all the things that you do. It's kind of the same thing, just, you know, sending out those letters of introduction to people that might want to hire you.
Right. Yeah.
I love those tips. Going back to the topic of feast and famine, I think many of us know that feeling that when you are in a famine cycle and all you want is work, and the work starts coming in, sometimes even multiple clients contact you and you suddenly have more work than you can handle, or you're working really hard during that time when you have a lot of projects coming in. Do you have any smart habit tips for our listeners on how to create more times of feast than famine while not burning yourself out and getting too overwhelmed and overworked?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'll go back to project rates, because if you create the right project rates and raise your rates, everybody out there, start thinking about raising your rates if you haven't done it in the last few months. It's really hard. I still really have low confidence when I'm thinking about raising rates. I'm not great at it all the time. But project rates means that you can earn more money and in a particular hour and, you know, work less during that week. You know, I was listening to, I think it was it Sarah Townsend on your podcast that said, double your rates. And if you, I think that was who it said it, double your rates. And if you lose half your clients, well, then you lose half your clients. You're getting the same amount of work, or the same amount of money for fewer clients. And then you're either working less or you can go out and get more clients. And so, you know, project rates are really the way to go. And I always say I have what I call my secret hourly rate. And it's not so secret because I tell everyone. Right now it's $125 an hour. And that is not what I charge necessarily. It's just when I am creating rates or, you know, working, I'm always trying to keep in mind, can I make that at minimum per hour? And I do a lot of time tracking too. And so I will know whether I hit that minimum rate per hour. So it's good just to know yourself, like, what are you aiming for? And then also when you create a project rate, create it higher than you're a little comfortable with. And know before you present it to the client that what's the lowest you'll go. So if you start negotiating down and you say, okay, I'll try to charge them, you know, like I'll do this project for $1,000. Well, then maybe I'll propose $1,500. But I know if they say, well, can you do it for $800? Well, no, mm-hmm. I mean, I can't do it for $800, but what about $1,000? Know that bottom, that minimum, because you'll get into negotiating and you'll agree to anything and you'll feel flustered and then you're going to hate yourself later. So it's good to know all these numbers before you go in and be a little uncomfortable. It takes a little time to get to, you know, that place where you feel pretty confident about negotiating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And something I find that's helpful too is, like, if you think about that top number, what you would charge them, you're not actually taking that home. It's not staying in your pocket. You've got to pay taxes. Right. You have to pay expenses. So if you do really want to make $1,000, like take, as they call it, take home, you know, think about what you would need to pay out of that for other things like taxes and such. And then maybe you would just feel more comfortable raising it anyway, knowing that you really want to take $1,000 at the end. So maybe that's a little helpful for some people.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I don't actually think about it that way that often, and I should, because I think that is really important, that I'm not bringing home all of that money. So I need to think about it like that too.
Yeah. We love how you give annual recaps on your podcast about how you did the previous year, including how much you earned, what kind of clients you worked with, what went well, and what you'd like to improve or change going forward. How do you feel a regular business audit helps you as a professional? And what would you suggest to people who want to start doing an audit like this for their business on a regular basis?
I mean, you don't know what you don't know, right? So if you're just constantly doing the work day to day and working in for your clients and not taking a step back and analyzing and, you know, investigating and auditing and really thinking about your business, you're not going to have any idea how much money you're making or what you're, if you're hitting your goals or what your goals even are. You know, you're just working, right? And that's not really fun. And it doesn't really set you up to grow. And I mean grow, you don't have to get bigger, but make more money or be more fulfilled with the work you do. So I think it's really important to, I'm very analytical anyway, but I think it's really important to step back and really look at your business and focus on your business and not just in your business. And I think there's a couple things I would say you could start to do if you're not already. You know, I'm kind of, it's almost embarrassing to say, but a few years ago, I really wasn't tracking how much money I was earning every month. And that was a privilege. I had that anchor client that I lost at the beginning of the pandemic. They were paying pretty much like the bare minimum I needed to pay my bills. And so I was comfortable because anything over that was kind of extra money to do all the things I wanted to do in my life. And so I knew it was coming in every month. It was, you know, it was an anchor client came in every month. So I wasn't, and I had the numbers in my head, but I wasn't diligently, like, this project came in. And so what I do now, and I started this, my friend Maggie Caritas, who's been on the podcast, recommended this, and I started it. I can't remember if I think I might have done it a little pre-pandemic, but I definitely did it when the pandemic hit. Is I just have a simple Excel document. I have one for every month, and each in my Excel document. So for January document, I have different tabs for my ongoing clients. They all get a different tab that also lets me track if I, you know, what projects I'm doing for them, so I don't forget that I have a deadline. And then I have a tab for writing, which has various writing assignments in it. And then I have a tab that month for random projects, whatever else I might be doing. And then the final tab is a tally, and I carry this through for the whole year. And it's columns for every month. So I just have January. These are all the assignments that I had in January and how much I'm going to make. And then I see the total. And this is not cash flow. This is the assignments I got that month. So I, and because I have a good cash flow and I'm not you know, working paycheck to paycheck. That's get to that goal, work toward that goal of not working paycheck to paycheck. I can look at that and know whether I'm hitting my financial goal that month. And I don't even, because I don't have to worry so much about the money that each month. So like this past January and February, I think I only billed for a couple $1,000s, which is not going to pay my bills. But in February, I was on track to bill for like $20,000. So when you combine January and February, I could see, okay, so even though I'm not billing for a lot in January, I'll be all right because February, it's all coming in February. It's all being billed in February. And so I'm tracking that every single month. And I really do believe that that's why I made so much money last year, because I was checking, okay, like I need to bring in more money this particular month. So I need to reach out to people and see if they have articles that I can write, or I need to do a little bit more marketing, or wow, I'm bringing in a lot of money this month and I'm got a lot of work to do. So I can kind of step back and not reach out to anybody this month. And so really just tracking your income, which sounds really simple, but I don't think that many of us do it in that way where that Excel sheet is always open on my desk and I can always see how much money I'm on target to make that month. And then another thing that I've talked about a lot is time tracking. So I have done time tracking in the past. Laura Vanderkam, who is like a time tracking guru, I don't love that word, but she really is. I heard her speak several years ago. I've read a lot of her books. She talks a lot about time tracking, and I kind of did it off and on. But last year, I used the, I might have done this in 2020, but last year I really got religious about time tracking, and I used the Toggle app on my desktop computer and or my laptop, and I track all of my time. And some people say, oh my gosh, that's such a chore, or that's just a pain, or why do you do that? And I'm telling you, it was a game changer, because time tracking showed me how whether I was undercharging for a project, so I knew that I needed to charge that client more next time, or it would show me if I did a project that was kind of the first time I did that type of project, it would show me what I should charge the next time I do that type of project for a different client. Time tracking keeps me on task, because if I'm sitting at my desk for 4 hours and I look at time tracking and it shows I only did 2 hours of work because I was playing on Twitter for 10 minutes here and there over the next, you know, like no one else knows this information but me, but it's embarrassing. And I would like, I don't want to be that person. So I would hold myself accountable simply because I have this Toggle app on all the time. And so time tracking really just helps me know how I'm, another thing it did, it helps me know how I'm using my time. So it showed me which days of the week I was more productive, which days of the week I'm not productive, which hours of the day I'm more productive. I did a couple things last year because of the what I saw from looking at my time tracking, which I analyzed at the end of every quarter. And I realized, I knew this intuitively, that I'm just not very productive on Friday afternoons. Again, the afternoon thing, it's Friday. But I would still be sitting at my desk pretending I was doing something. And I would look at my time tracking and I'm like, well, I spent, you know, all this time doing whatever, basic admin or playing around on social media. So I instituted last year, all right, I'm not going to work Friday afternoons because I'm not really working anyway. So by the time I have lunch, I'm done for the day. And so I'm very productive Friday mornings and usually, and my lunch might happen just whenever I'm at a good stopping point. So it could be 11 a.m. or it could be 2 p.m. But I know whenever I get to lunch, like I've wrapped it up for the week and I'm done, and I get 2.5 days off. And I don't think I would have committed to that without really seeing those numbers by time tracking all year.
It's so good. All the information you got from time tracking is really useful to not only learn about your business, but like how you work best. And we've heard from other colleagues who say like they'll take Friday for professional development because by Friday they're basically, like you said, they're done. So at least they're not producing client work, but they're still learning something for their business. And that way they still get the professional development in. But, you know, whatever, like you said, works for you is what you should work toward.
Yeah, and I joke too that I declared last year at some point, I declared Mondays, no meeting Mondays.
Me too.
And
I do the same. Yeah.
It's so great because I realized, I mean, again, I knew this kind of intuitively, but until I saw the time where I'm really productive on Mondays and it starts off the week really great. And if I have meetings, it breaks up my productivity. Plus, I'm an introvert and I realize I have to kind of ease back into the week and talking to human beings. Like, if I have to connect to a Zoom meeting and look presentable at 10 a.m. on a Monday, like, I'm just not happy about that. And I was like, well, why am I doing it then? So there are times where I have to do it, where it's a group meeting, and that's really the only time. But I do my very best to have no meeting Mondays.
That's so good. Yeah. I second that. I recommend it. It's great. Yeah. So you've talked a bit about tracking your time and like what you spend your time on and where you're productive. And sort of on a similar topic, in a recent episode, you shared about working with a virtual assistant. In fact, we'll link to that in the show notes as well. But can you tell us what kind of tasks your VA does for you and how that benefits your business as well?
Yeah, this is my VA right now is fairly new. I've had her for a few months and she's my second VA after kind of having a break without one. Mm-hmm. And right now she mostly helps me with my podcast. So she is creating social media posts and scheduling those posts. I also have her do research. Like when I started the Facebook group, Deliberate Freelancer Facebook group, I was like, I knew a little bit about this, but I thought, you know, can you do some research on like what questions I should ask people and how I need to set it up and what I should think mm-hmm. about? And so I had my previous VA did some research on when we were looking at project management tools. I said, all right, so research all the project management tools. Tell me what the prices are if they're free and give me a recommendation. What do you think would be easiest and why? And so I like having them kind of do that research for me. My previous VA also did a lot of creating a lot of tracking documents. So that Excel spreadsheet, which doesn't take long to create, but that one I was talking about earlier, like you could have a VA do that kind of thing. They can also help you with scheduling meetings, cleaning up your email. Some people need that. Managing a blog. Some people have a VA, like if you're a writer, you might need a transcriptionist. Or, you know, just kind of doing those admin tasks that can be done remotely. Mm-hmm. And that takes all of that off of your plate, which I actually like doing a lot of admin. So I have to be careful that I don't do it all the time and that I do give it to someone else because it takes it off your plate, which means you're not spending those hours doing admin work, which means you can either relax and take some of the burden off yourself or go after client work, which pays a lot more. Because I like to say, if you are doing the admin work, then you are, and say your secret hourly rate is $100 an hour, you're then paying an administrative assistant $100 an hour because you're that administrative assistant. So would you go out and hire somebody for $100 an hour to do like basic admin work? I would probably not. I mean, they would love that, but probably not. And so you're taking away the opportunity where you can go find clients and actually earn that $100 an hour rather than doing all that work yourself. And so I really think that mindset shift is important for people to understand that you have to spend money to make money, and a VA can really help you do some things so you can focus on earning more money.
Yeah, so that's so good. And we even polled on Instagram, we polled our listeners / colleagues there just to see if other translators used virtual assistants as well. I've had one in the past. I'm actually about to hire another one now. And a couple of people responded and said yes, and it was the best thing they've done for their business. So I love that you shared some ideas, you know, on what you could possibly do if you have a virtual assistant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. I love hearing your poll results.
Yeah. Okay, so the last question we have is, if you could give 1 to 3 tips to our listeners about growing their freelance businesses deliberately, what would they be?
I've talked around this a little bit, and you'll hear it in my podcast, it's really overall to embrace this mindset that you're a business owner. You're not just quotes, there's my air quotes there, just a little freelancer trying to make a living. Like that's the tone I hear when I hear people say, oh, I'm just a freelancer. No, you own a business. And so try to think and reframe that in your head, and then also kind of flip the script every time you're talking to someone about your business. Like, what would we joke about? What would a confident white man say, right? Like, if that helps you get to that place, you know, what would someone, like, let's pretend I have all this confidence. What would someone say? So instead of saying, well, how much are you paying for that project? You just flat out say, as a fact, my rate is X, and then stop talking. Yeah. That's what a confident business owner would do. So, you know, pretend, you know, until you become that confident. And then, you know, if someone is, it's a Friday and you have a client and they email you something and just say like, I need this by Monday. Well, no, that's not acceptable. You are not telling me, you know, like you're not asking me. I have a life and I don't work weekends and I have, you know, other clients. And so do not apologize. Never apologize unless you actually did something really wrong. And don't do that thing if they say they need it by Monday. You can say like, and you can give the, use that as an opportunity to tell them what your values and your boundaries are in your business. You can say, I don't work weekends, but I can have it to you on Wednesday. If that still works for you, let me know. And if it doesn't work for them, they can go find someone else to do it. So I think it's just sort of like thinking constantly about how would a confident business owner say this? And it takes practice. I wasn't like this in the beginning. I had to practice and have uncomfortable conversations and, you know, and pep myself up. And then I would just say, be intentional. Really think, you know, think through that work-life clarity. What do you want in your personal life? What do you want your freelance business to look like? Set goals, make plans, and then work the plan. Don't just sort of go day to day without any kind of roadmap to what you're doing. And then again, a great time to do that is to have these solo business retreats that we talked about. You know, you can do one once a year, but more often it's probably better to do one, you know, once a quarter, even if it's like a mini half day retreat in your dining room instead of your office, to just really think about, what do I want? What do I want this all to look like? And what are my goals? So just be really intentional about that.
Yes, I love that. And I think it's important to remember that you get to create that roadmap. And if you are just working, living one day to the next in your business, that means that other people are dictating what you do.
Yes, exactly. Well said.
Well, this was such a great conversation, Melanie. We're super grateful that you joined us today. I know that everybody, all of our colleagues who listen are going to be excited to hear you on the podcast. And I think you drop some really good gems in here for everybody. So thanks for that.
Excellent. Yeah, this was a lot of fun. I really appreciate coming on the show.
Thank you. So, but before we go, we would love it if you would join us for a special segment. We like to ask our guests to share something with our listeners about a favorite book, resource, or gadget, or anything that they feel is worth sharing with the listeners. And we call this our guests' favorites. So is there anything that you'd like to recommend?
Yeah, something has nothing to do with my business, really. I'm a bookworm. I'm sure a lot of listeners out there are bookworms as well. And so I discovered last year this app called Reading List, and it's free on my iPhone. And I was really looking for a way. I used to track my TBR, my to-be-read book list. I had like a binder I created a couple years ago, and that was really fun, especially pre-pandemic. I would take it into used bookstores and like go down the list and look for books.
I do that.
I had on my list.
Veronica just super saw me fun, do that in a bookstore. I had my list, and she was like, what is that?
Oh, Madalena, I'm right there with you. I love it so much. But then I was listening. One of the things I've done during the pandemic is I've really created this whole bookish world for myself. So beyond reading, I listen to a ton of book podcasts. I support some of those podcasts on Patreon, which gets me into their Facebook groups. So I have this lovely bookish world that is like, that's my pandemic hobby. I mean, I love it. But I was looking for a way to track this ever-growing TBR list. So the Reading List app is really simple, and that's what I wanted. I wanted something very simple that's just a list. But what you can do is you can create your own folders and you can organize them however you want. So you can have folders for different genres, which also really helps when you're in the bookstore, physical bookstore, that you can in that genre section. You can create lists. So I have various lists. I have two nieces and a nephew, and I have lists for them of books that I've heard of that I might want to get them, and also books that I've bought them, because you will easily forget what you've bought people. So you can create, I have lists of books that I didn't finish, my DNF lists. And so it's just super fun to have all of these different lists. And you can also mark when you've read a book, whether it's a book to read, you're reading, or you finished it, and add the finish dates in there. And then another really cool thing when you're physically in a bookstore is you can scan the barcode of a book and it pops into your app. So, cool. You know, I used to go around and take pictures of all the books I wanted.
I just did that too.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you want to buy books in a bookstore, but you can't buy the 72 books that you want to buy. And so you can just scan the little barcode and it pops right into your app. And so you don't have to worry later about, you know, putting those photos in there. So I'm a big fan. It's the Reading List app.
Oh my God, I just downloaded it. It's already, I'm going to have to like populate it with what's in my notes app. Yeah.
There goes your entire week now, yes. Let me tell you. It's so much fun.
Wow, cool. That's awesome. I need it. I love reading, but I have terrible memory. So it actually happened to me a few times where I would buy a book and I'm like, oh, wait, I already read this.
Yes. Yeah. I've been there. Yeah.
Thank you again for joining us today, Melanie. We know our colleagues and listeners will love hearing from you as much as we did. Before we go, where can our colleagues learn more about you or find you online?
The easiest place is deliberatefreelancer.com. Of course, the podcast Deliberate Freelancer is free on all the podcast apps. But if you go to deliberatefreelancer.com, you can listen to them on your computer, or you can just see all the different episodes at a glance. There's a link there to my newsletter. When you sign up for the newsletter, you get those templates that I was telling you earlier, those email templates that I sent out that earned me $30,000. So if you sign up for the newsletter, get those. And then also, Deliberate Freelancer is now on Facebook. We have a new Facebook group. So this is for listeners. I wanted to build a community of people that kind of believe in that business mindset. So you can find all of that at deliberatefreelancer.com.
Cool. Yeah. And I find myself going to your show notes often when I hear guests on your podcast. So that's awesome. We'll link to everything in our show notes too.
Great. Thank you so much.
And that's it for this episode on Smart Habits for Drumming Up New Business. Later this week, our email subscribers will get a summary of the episode with all the links to the resources that we mentioned today. So if you're not receiving our emails yet, please sign up on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com. Also, be sure to sign up for Melanie's Deliberate Freelancer email list at meledits.com or deliberatefreelancer.com, so you can get two free email templates that she used to secure $30,000 per email in new work. And yes, we did say that correctly. It's $30,000 per email. And we'll link to the page where you can sign up for her emails and grab those templates in our show notes too.
And if you like this episode, please follow our podcast, share it with your colleagues and friends, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. This only takes a minute, and we have recorded a quick video tutorial to show you how to do it. We'll link to it in the show notes.
Talk to you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered some simple strategies that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover, please send us a message at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd appreciate if you'd leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And please share the podcast with other translators you know.